Good afternoon, America. Happy Monday to you. I don't know how happy it is, but hey, it's the summer. Hopefully you're not working that hard. This is Mark Levine, broadcasting live to you from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Listen in, because we're bombing Iraq again. And you know what, folks? This time, I support it. Now, I know I sound like, I don't know, someone, an alcoholic who's gone back to the bottle, and this time it's going to be good. It is. Look, I oppose the war in Iraq strenuously. I marched for it. I understood that Saddam Hussein was like a brutal cap on top of a glass full of explosive gases. And even though he was brutal and terrible and corrupt and dangerous and murderous, and he tortured people in his prisons, nasty dictator, what he was stopping up was far worse. He was trapping in that bottle millennia of enmity between Sunni Muslim and Shia Muslim mostly, but there are other ethnicities, as we're learning, in Iraq, including ancient Christians who were there hundreds of years before Muslims arrived, including the Kurdish population, who are Muslim but not Arab and therefore a completely different ethnicity. Iraq was actually a lot like Yugoslavia when Marshal Tito was in charge. For those of you who don't remember or maybe don't know Southeast European history, there were a number of ethnicities in southeastern Yugoslavia as well. This all has to do, by the way, these are all the remains of the Ottoman Empire. So basically, there were all these little ethnicities all around. There were Serbians who were Orthodox Christian. There were Croatians who were Catholic Christian. There were Kosovars and Albanians who were Muslim, Sunni Muslim. And all of that area was conquered by the Turks, 1600s or so, 1500s. And similarly, the Turks also conquered east, and that would be areas of Iraq. That would be what is today Israel. That would be Syria. That would be areas of Sunni Muslims and Shia Muslims and Jews and Druze and Christians and all manner of ethnicities. And when an empire is largely in control, a lot of times they tampen down the animosities between various groups. Well, sometimes it requires a firm dictator to do that. Now, that doesn't mean I support the dictator, please. But Marshal Tito in Yugoslavia controlled a territory that include Catholic Croatia and Orthodox Serbia and Orthodox Montenegro, Christian Orthodox, and Muslim Kosovo and Slovenia, which for all I know is Protestant. It gets very confusing, and usually people of different ethnicities can live together in some way. I mean, they all spoke Serbo-Croatian. But when the dictator was removed, in this case, Marshal Tito died, suddenly all these ancient animosities came to the fore. And we remember 15, 20 years ago, closer to 20 now, all of this erupted, and there were the murders in Bosnia and Herzegovina. There was ethnic cleansing. It was pretty brutal. Well, happens in Europe, certainly happens in the Middle East, in spades. And we now know that Iraq is disintegrating. Iraq was never really a country. You have to remember that when the British and the French conquered the Ottoman Empire in after World War I, Turkey, the Ottoman Empire, joined World War I on the side of the Germans and Austrians, lost the war. So the Allies, British, French, took over, and they divided up the Middle East, and they drew boundaries that made little sense. They didn't necessarily put Sunni Muslims together and Shia Muslims together. There was no independent Kurdistan. They tried to do an independent Jewish state in Palestine, and that's had some problems you may have read about. But they tried to give every local ethnicity, well, they didn't try to give, it would have been nicer had they given them all their own countries. I mean, it's interesting, after World War I, in Eastern Europe, that's largely what Woodrow Wilson and the Europeans tried to do, right? The Czech Republic for the Czechs, or Czechoslovakia for the Czechs and the Slovaks, and Hungarians get their little country, and Romania get theirs, and Bulgaria gets theirs, and Austria gets theirs, and the boundaries weren't exact, and, you know, World War II came thereafter. But the point is, in general, one of the best ways to have people of different ethnicities and religions and languages and cultures live together is to give each and every one of them a state of their own. So I in no way mean to be Eurocentric on this. No question, Europe has had these exact same problems as the Middle East has. It's just that Europe has finally found stable boundaries, has finally found some kind of unity. We still have problems in Ukraine and Russia, so it ain't exactly over yet. But the Middle East has similar problems. As the great philosopher Rodney King once said, can't we all get along? Rodney, wish we could. But because Iraq had all these different ethnicities, it required, again, required sounds so bad because I don't want to sound like I'm supporting this guy, but let's just say that because you had a brutal strongman like Saddam Hussein in charge, that largely kept the Sunni from killing the Shia and so forth. Now, of course, Saddam Hussein then would have a fierce war with Iran, which is Shia Muslim, though Persian and not Arab, and the Sunni Muslim government, Arab government of Saddam Hussein, they would all kill. Actually, 1 million people died in that brutal war in the 1980s, and we largely, smartly, stayed out of it. Of course, we didn't completely stay out of it. You may remember the Iran-Contra scandal, where basically we were arming both Iraq and Iran, and the poor Kurdish people got stuck in the middle. So a word on the Kurds. Who are the Kurds? The Kurds are an ancient people that live in the mountains of northern Iraq, of what you might call western Iran, of eastern Turkey, of northeastern Syria. It's all contiguous. It's all one area. There used to be a Kurdistan. There hasn't been an independent Kurdistan in centuries, ever since the Ottomans came and messed everything up. And by the way, I don't even mean to blame the Ottomans. I mean, we had the same trouble in the Roman Empire, or for that matter, the Russian Empire. Have you checked out Chechnya lately? One of the problems with empires, oh, the British Empire. Hey, I mean, look at what happened in India between the Hindus and the Muslims in Pakistan and India, or frankly, in all of colonial Africa. All right, so I don't mean to in any way suggest that what's going on in Iraq is somehow unique to that region of the world. Unfortunately, human beings tend to place themselves in certain ethnic categories based on religion, based on language, based on culture. We are, in essence, tribal peoples, and we like to think we've risen above that, but we largely have not. And what's going on in Iraq is ever since we got rid of the strongman dictator, Saddam Hussein, who was a Sunni Muslim in charge of a mostly Shia country with a substantial Sunni minority. Oh, you do know what Sunni and Shia are, don't you? Just in case you don't, it's kind of the two great wings of Islam. Not that there aren't other wings of Islam, but just like Christianity basically has three primary wings, if you will. You've got the Catholics, the Roman Catholics, who were sort of the original ones, along with the Eastern Orthodox that split when the Roman Empire split, West and East. Yes, that's actually a 1700-year-old split. And then the Protestants came out of the Catholics around Martin Luther's time, 15th century. So Protestants, Catholics, Eastern Orthodox, that's basically the Christian splits, though there are others. The Muslims split right after Muhammad died. They all agreed on the problem of Muhammad. As soon as he's gone, what happens? Well, there's a battle over who's going to succeed him. Is it going to be his son-in-law? That's what the Shias say. Or is it going to be a group of Muslim clerics, sort of the keepers of the faith? That's what the Sunnis say. And they've been fighting over that for 1,400 years, even though all those people are long dead. But then again, you could say, what are Catholics and Protestants and the Orthodox fighting over? Surely people shouldn't die over whether or not Mary is divine or not, or whether or not when you eat the wafer and the wine, it truly is the body and blood of Jesus, or simply the symbol of the body and blood of Jesus. Whatever your views are on any of these intra-Christian theological discussions, clearly they don't warrant death. So it's not really about the religion at all. You think Protestants and Catholics in Ireland were fighting over the divinity of Mary? You think that's why people were dying? It has to do with culture and people, and you trust your brother, and you trust your brother more than your cousin, but you trust your cousin more than you do that other family, and you trust that other family, which speaks your language and practices your religion and goes to church with you, more than you trust that other family that goes to that different church, and by God, all Christians will stand together against all Muslims, and by God, all Americans will stand together again. You get the point. In any case, Iraq was always this cauldron of different peoples cobbled together by English colonialists. I don't think it ever should have been a country at all. And in fact, I think most Iraqis agree with me. In fact, it's not kind of my role to say what kind of country they should be. But we invaded Iraq. I thought it was a mistake. I said it was a mistake. At the time we invaded Iraq, there were no Sunni terrorists or Shia terrorists, particularly in Iraq. The only terrorist was the head terrorist, and that was Saddam Hussein, and he was the dictator, and he was a bad guy. But he wasn't attacking America. He was just a bad guy who sat on top of a lot of oil. In any case, he was Sunni. He ruled over this majority Shia population. We come in, we depose him, and suddenly the Shia and the Sunni begin a massive civil war. Now, there is this one people that stays out of it, the Kurds. Set them aside for a moment. They're the heroes of my tale. Let's leave them aside for a moment, though. The Shia and the Sunni are fighting each other. We send in tons of troops. We have thousands of Americans die, tens of thousands of Americans wounded, hundreds of thousands of Iraqi civilians dead. For what? Yeah, I still don't know. I mean, did we get much more oil now than we did under Saddam Hussein? What were all these deaths for? Well, for the people, it was to take charge of their own country, and the Shia had been mistreated by Saddam Hussein for quite some time, and they were the majority. So in a democracy, they're going to take over. They're going to be the majority. But the main thing about democracy you've got to keep in mind is that winning an election, that's never enough. A democracy is not winning one election. Adolf Hitler won his first election with a plurality, by the way. It's about, first of all, being able to have subsequent elections. That's important, right? It's one thing to have George Washington as our first president and John Adams his vice president as our second one. America really began democracy when the Federalist Party was thrown out of office and Thomas Jefferson became president and Adams left peacefully after a really, really raucous, angry election. 1800s when American democracy began. So it's not just following election after election, but protecting minority rights. And that's what Iraq's done such a terrible job of. And I'll give you more history when we come back. If you want to call in, express your 2 cents on any of this, I encourage you to call in. 888-653-7543. This is Mark Levine. We'll be right back with more history so you know why we're in this mess that I have no easy answer out of. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine. I'm giving you the history, at least as I best understand it, of the Middle East, so I can explain why we are actually bombing a mountainside in Iraq and why I reluctantly support it, even though I opposed our intervention in Iraq. And like most stories, you can't begin at 2014. You've got to go in the past. So that's what I'm doing. Kurt from Los Angeles is calling in, and he has a comment to make. Go ahead, Kurt.
Hey, Mark, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you, sir? Thank you. Glad to be here. I'll be here on and off this week, all week.
Okay. All right, cool. Hey, man, first off, I want to pay you a compliment and tell you that I am very impressed. I mean, authentically impressed at your knowledge of world history, and I appreciate you breaking it down for us because this is what, you know, true radio needs, is to get into the meat of it.
Absolutely. History matters, and it's so easy to say, these people, let's go into the history, find out where people came from, where they lived, and what rights people should have. Absolutely.
Oh, well, I'm glad you said that because although you are hitting the point on Iraq and what's mm-hmm. going on there, mm-hmm. I'm a bit miffed as to how you personally are not more empathetic as to what's going on in Gaza and Israel right now, because I don't know a whole lot about the history, but all I know is that there's been a border dispute between the Palestinians and Israelis since about 1967. And years, about starting in around 2000 when George Bush got in the office, all of a sudden there was this uptick of Jewish settlements along the Gaza Strip border. And I know that Palestinians...
Okay, well, yeah, it's interesting that you say Palestinians. You know who... There was no Palestine before 67. It was Jordan and Egypt. You know that, right?
No,
There's never been an Arab state called Palestine.
So you can educate me, because here's what I...
There's never been an Arab state called Palestine in world history.
Okay.
What they are, they're Arabs. And they're Arabs that live there, and they have rights to live there. I support their rights. I would love to see the people of Gaza freed from the terrorist group Hamas that has so destroyed their lives. Absolutely. I have sympathy for them. I'm glad Israel left. Well, I take it back. At the time of 2005, I supported Israel's withdrawal from Gaza because I thought that the Palestinian Arabs there would make a peaceful state. Unfortunately, they did not. And that's you know, of course, Iraq hasn't made a peaceful state either. So, you know, they're more than one in that regard. But I have tremendous sympathy
for
them.
Right. But let me ask you a question, though. How peaceful of a state would you have when someone, let's say, for example, let's bring it down to, like, you own your home. You own a house, right?
Okay, yeah, but we're coming up on a break. So real quick, Kurt.
All right, well, can you hold me through the break? Because this is a real good...
All right, I'll hold you a little bit further through the break. Sure. Fair enough.
All right, cool. Okay. All right, well, let's say you go home today, and your neighbor who normally lives across the street, you come home, and he's got a tent popped up. His kids, let's say, pop a tent up in your front yard, and they're playing with your kids. And they got
big difference, Kurt. I
got
to take my break, but big difference. If it's in my yard and I own the property, I have a right to complain. If it's down the street where no one owns the property, I don't think I have a right to complain. 888-653-7543, right back after this. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine. I'm trying to give the short history of the Middle East so I can explain why we are actually bombing Iraq right now and why, even though I opposed the original Iraq war, I do support this limited action that President Obama is doing. Getting a little sidetracked, but Kurt asked a fair question, and so I wanted to respond to him. Kurt from Los Angeles says, is the situation any different for Israel and Gaza? And he gives the analogy, Kurt, you were saying, of someone who builds a house in my yard or something like that.
You kind of got sidetracked because you started talking about if you don't own the property,
right,
you don't have a right to complain, this and that. Well,
right,
Here's the thing. I don't know how Gaza came to be, but
I'll be happy to tell you.
Now, there's a such thing as Gaza, and
and
there are real human beings that are in Gaza right now.
Okay, I can quickly tell you how Gaza came to be if you want.
Slow down, but don't sidetrack me. Let me lay it out.
All right.
Keep the thought in your head. Let me lay it out, and then you can
let
you go. Okay.
Lay it on me,
son. First off, you look at the map of Israel compared to Gaza Strip. The
mm-hmm.
Gaza Strip looks to be about a little piece of land
mm-hmm.
that is the same size as one of Donald Trump's golf courses. Okay?
It's not that small.
It is
but
an itty-bitty piece of land.
About twice the size of D.C. That's true.
Of Israel.
It's a very small piece
very
of land.
Small. And you,
right. Mm-hmm.
Top of each other. If you look at Gaza from the long shot that you see on the news, it looks like south side of Chicago.
It's
you
bigger
know,
than that, but okay.
Everywhere. You don't see no land. No,
oh, no. There's lots of empty land
no
in Gaza. Go to Google Maps. You'll see there are whole areas where there used to be
Come on.
Farms
let's
and all.
Let's keep it real. It is a very small piece of land.
It's
That's
small
point,
and densely populated,
okay?
But it's not as packed as, say, Manhattan or New York. I just want to be clear.
Okay.
Or Singapore. But go ahead.
Right. Okay. So now, here's my analogy, though, because I keep hearing this thing about two-state solution, 1967 borders, and Israel doesn't want to do the 1967 borders. And then around the early 2000s, I kept hearing about Jewish settlements getting closer and closer and encroaching that the Palestinians didn't like because they felt like there was some dispute about the borders. But I'm thinking, golly, Gaza's so small, Israel's so big, why can't Israel build whatever they're building somewhere else? Why they got to come right up on the edge of the lawn or the front door of somebody else? And so I had this analogy, and I wrote something. I sent you a link to it on Daily Coast last night, and I named it Sick and Tired of Getting Bushwhacked, because it seems like this larger country known as Israel is building settlements right up along the Gaza Strip. And I'm trying to understand, you know, if you had a small house personally, right, and your neighbor started building and put a tent up in your front yard, you'd probably say, well, what's going on? Oh, well, you know, you think it's temporary. Your kids are just playing in the front yard, whatever. Then you leave, come back, there's some more stuff in your front yard. And then you go to sleep one night, wake up the next day, and your neighbor says, anymore. We're going to put an embargo on you, or we're going to put a seizure on you.
Yeah,
and
it's nothing like that, Kurt.
I can't go to the grocery store.
It's nothing like that. And it's important you understand where all this started. First of all, Israel is a tiny country. It's the size of New Jersey. The Arab countries are larger than the entire United States of America, okay? By isolating, by pretending that Gaza is some separate entity from the Arab world, it's kind of like saying, you know, Donald Trump, okay, what Donald Trump then, he has a swing set in your yard. And you're like, why are you taking my swing set? It's like, Donald Trump, you got all this property. And now you're complaining about that. This area of the Middle East, Gaza is small, no question about it. And the people there, frankly, should be allowed. Egypt conquered Gaza in 1948. That's what happened. That's how Gaza got started. Egypt did not allow the people of Gaza to live in the rest of Egypt the way I think it should have. It wouldn't be so crowded in there. But the answer about the settlements is all the Jewish settlements in the West Bank and Gaza are built on territory that's owned by either Jews or no one. It's very important for people to understand that. It's not like Israel goes and an Arab has title to the land and it says, get off your land and we're going in there. What it does is they go on empty land. Now, the empty land, and we're mostly talking about the West Bank. Remember, in Gaza, there are no Jewish settlements, none. There were Jewish settlements. Remember, Jews have lived in Gaza for 3,000 years. Arabs have lived in Gaza for 1,500 years. That's a long time, to be sure, but, you know, Jews were there. To say that Jews can't live there when they were there first is a little weird. But the heart of it is Israel removed all the Jews from Gaza, and unfortunately, Gaza made war against Israel. And so, you know, it's here you have people living on their own land, Jews on territory owned by Jews. It's like you live on your own house, and then you say, you know what, I'm going to give you my house. Just don't attack me anymore. Take my house. And then they say, no, we're going to still attack you. So that's how I see the analogy. I do want to go, though, and move on and talk about the rest of the Middle East if I could. But feel free to contact me on Facebook, and we can continue this conversation or Twitter as well. All right? Thanks for calling, Kurt. Okay, so let me get back to the rest of the Middle East because it's important to understand what we're doing there. The whole thing falls apart. We go into Iraq. We then basically try to cobble together a country that never should have existed in the first place. And we basically prevent the civil war by allowing the Sunni Muslims of Western Iraq to have the same rights as the Shia, because the Shia are now in control. They're the majority. And we want to give the Sunni to have that right, those rights as well. That's called the Arab Awakening or the Sunni Awakening. And then President Obama decides, and I understand it, to leave. We never should have been there in the first place. But the guy in charge, this Prime Minister Maliki, is corrupt. And he just wants to help the Shia, and he mistreats the Sunnis. So now you have this terrorist organization called ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. Sometimes they call it ISIL. Sometimes they just call it the Islamic State. They come out of the terrorist attack, they come out of Syria. It's complex, I know. Let's go back. Syria is a Shia leader, that's Assad, ruling over Sunni Muslims. And he's brutal, and he's actually far worse than Saddam Hussein, because instead of just torturing his political opponents and mistreating them horribly, he starts killing hundreds of thousands of innocent people. 170,000 are dead today. And by the way, I called for us to do something about what was going on in Syria when only 3,000 were dead. And mark my words, another 50,000 people are going to be dead next year. And if you think, Kurt, that what's going on in Gaza is bad with a few hundred people, imagine 50,000 innocent men, women, and children lined up and slaughtered, bombs coming down from the sky. It's brutal. It's horrible. And I thought we should have done basically a no-fly zone. Here's the problem when we arm people to defend themselves. The arms often end up in the wrong hands. One of the main reasons why ISIS has so much power is they're fighting with our own arms. Arms we left behind for the Iraqi military, arms that the Iraqi military basically threw away and ran back when ISIS took over. Here's the heart of it. We now have a terrorist state, this Islamic State. And by the way, please don't confuse This is not an anti-Muslim thing. There are plenty. Indonesia comes to mind, even Turkey. I don't really like Erdogan, but it is a secular Islamic state. There are plenty of Islamic states that are not terrorist groups. Saudi Arabia, we can talk about its problems, but this is a caliphate that wants to basically put in strict Islamic law. And strict Islamic law means that Christians have to pay a very, very heavy tax or convert or die. The Jews, by the way, were kicked out of Iraq in 1948. They're all living in Israel now. In fact, Israel is a majority of its population is from the Middle East, from Jews that are refugees from Arab countries. But there's still Christians, ancient Christians in Iraq that have been there for, well, thousands of years, certainly there before Arabs were there, and even a religion older than Christianity, a fantastically interesting religion called Zoroastrianism, of which this group called the Yazidi sect basically has put together a whole bunch of religious principles. It's fascinating. It's been there, like I said, more than 2,000 years, and they're being kicked out by this terrorist group as well. They're running to the safety of our old friends, the Kurds. Remember the Kurds? They are this other separate people that I think deserves a state. Better yet, the Kurds are pro-American. They trust us. We can trust them. I've never trusted the Iraqi government, just like I don't trust the Afghani government. We go in there, we topple these dictators, and then we have elections, and we presume that the people in their first election are going to choose some kind of moral person who's looking out for everybody. Not the case. A lot of times, early democracies choose some pretty vicious people. It's nice to see, it's wonderful when it happens. In the Czech Republic, Václav Havel went from poet to resistance leader to one of the best leaders of a state I've ever seen. But that's rare. A lot of times the people who begin to run these states are part of the groups that have been fighting these wars. They're the head tribal leader, the head warlord, the head terrorist. And Maliki is not good for certainly the Sunnis in Iraq. So the Sunnis, not liking Maliki, have been supporting ISIS, which is a Sunni terrorist group, maybe not realizing how awful ISIS is. Just to go back in curtain Gaza, I think that's what happened with Hamas as well. The people of Gaza, recognizing the Palestinian Authority was corrupt, decided, well, we're going to vote for Hamas, not realizing that Hamas is, well, like ISIS or Al-Qaeda, basically an Islamic a terrorist organization that doesn't ever want peace. The heart of it is that right now in Iraq, an ancient population that has been there thousands of years in the same mountain, these aren't people moving in and out as happens so much throughout the Middle East. These are people who've been in the same place for thousands of years practicing the same religion. They are unique people. It's not like they can go to another Yazidi state. There's nowhere else they can go. When you have a unique people like the Kurds or the Jewish people or the Yazidis or any unique people, I think they need a safe place to go. And I'll just circle back to Kurt and anything else. Sunni Muslims absolutely need a safe place to go. Shia Muslims need a safe place. Kurds need a safe place. Yazidis, Jews, all the people of the Middle East, Christians, absolutely Christians need to have a safe country. One of the reasons why Lebanon was set up was because that was where there was a significant population of Christians to have a place where they could actually, were in sufficient numbers to run their own country. The point is that good fences sometimes are necessary for good neighbors. And the only reason why there's no war now in the former Yugoslavia is because Serbs have their state, and so do Montenegrins, and so do Kosovos, and so does Croatia, and so does Slovenia. And each of them has a separate religion, and they trust their own people. We are a tribal society. I think the end of Iraq is nigh. I think we need to recognize, let the Kurds have a wonderful state of their own. We should support that state, and that the Shia have a state, the Sunni have a state, and if any of these become terrorist groups, and they don't allow minorities to live freely in their country, then, well, they're going to incur our wrath. And I know people say we shouldn't be the world's policemen, and I don't want to take any America shouldn't have any role in deciding the border disputes. between Sunni Islam and Shia Islam, between Israel and the Palestinians, between the Sunni Arabs and the Jews. But the Sunni Arabs should have a state. Israel should have a state. The Kurds should have a state. Every people in the region should have one safe place to go. And they may not agree on the boundaries, and they may fight over the boundaries, and Europe has fought over its boundaries for thousands of years. How often have France and Germany fought over Alsace-Lorraine? But as long as each people has a state, and that's why I say whether it's the people of the West Bank should have a state, the Arab people should have a state, and the Jewish people should have a state. Everybody, I feel like Oprah, you get a state, and you get a state. Everybody gets a state. And if you don't like where you're living and it's too crowded, you should be able to move to some other state where life is better for you. The reason why we have to do something in Iraq is because the Yazidi people have nowhere to go. They have no other people. They're not like the Palestinian Arabs of Gaza who could go to Egypt or Jordan or stay there or live with other Arabs, Sunni Muslims who speak Arabic and have their culture and move a few miles away. These people have nowhere to go. And they're being massacred. And we have to remember the only reason ISIS is there in the first place is because we invaded Iraq and caused all of this to happen. Now, one answer is, Mark, the U.S. should just stay out of it all. Just go home. Let these tribes fight each other. Stay out of it. And actually, when it comes to border disputes, I think we should stay out of it. Let them fight each other. Let them decide their border. But when it comes to complete conquering, when it comes to annihilation, when it comes to one people who refuses to let another people exist, that's very different from two peoples fighting over where the border should be. When one people says, we're going to annihilate you, you're going to cease to exist, we are not having a border dispute, we want genocide, that's, I think, when we should come in and try to protect people from, well, from mass murder. So I applaud Obama for doing something. I recognize it's a morass. I actually think that airstrikes are much, much better than giving weapons because they can turn out in the wrong hands. But I think we'll find that the Kurdish people, as distinct from some of the other allies we have in the region, Iraq or Afghanistan, the Kurdish people are longstanding people. They've been there. They've been persecuted. They will support America, and I think we should support them. Right back after this. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine. I now have Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service on the line. Victoria, what's going on in Iraq?
First of all, President Obama will be giving some remarks at about 4:45 Eastern time today on the latest situation in Iraq. From the U.S. perspective, so we will know more then of what he has to say. But certainly in terms of the political situation in Iraq, it is extremely murky. Iraq's president named a new prime minister to end Nouri al-Maliki's 8-year rule today, but Maliki is refusing to go. And the question is he going to hang on or will he step down today?
Done with him? I mean, hasn't Maliki overstayed his welcome? Is it clear that his entire country has rejected him?
Yes, it is clear the entire country has rejected him, but he is hanging on to power. If he goes, he faces assassination attempts and possible jail at the very jail at the least, an assassination attempt or successful attempt.
That makes sense. So he's putting his own well-being ahead of his entire country. Well, he wouldn't be the first person to do that. Tell me this: how are the Yazidi people doing? I know we bombed ISIS and some of them were able to escape, but it's still pretty rough up there, isn't it, on that mountain?
It's very rough up there on that mountain. It's extremely rocky on the mountain. Very, very scarce vegetation. Very quaggy. They are in several different locations, which is one of the reasons why it's difficult for all of them to take advantage of the humanitarian aid drops. So they're not all getting the food and water that's being dropped. So that is an issue. It also gets extremely hot, as hot as 120 degrees. Mm. So that is also a problem.
Are the Kurds able to protect the people there, or is ISIS still making advances?
ISIS is making advances. ISIS, in some areas, ISIS took another town today, although the Kurds took back two towns yesterday. So the Kurds have been making some advances since the U.S. airstrikes. They have undoubtedly helped. And the U.S. announced today that it is now directly supplying weapons to the Kurds, and that should help them. They've been pleading for weapons for months.
Is there any hope of us actually defeating our own weapons, which were stolen by ISIS? Is it tough for us to fight our own stuff?
Yes, it is tough for us to fight our own stuff. And ISIS keeps its weapons stockpile in Syria. So, and we're not bombing Syria. So the base of its weapons is untouched.
I'm afraid that may have to come next. Victoria, it's a wild world out there. Thank you for calling in.